Well, we're happy that you're here today for part two of our four-part series on God's existence. And as I mentioned last week, we're doing the presentation first. And if you're just here for that, you're welcome to leave at the end or stop watching after it's over. But of course, for those of you who are accustomed to coming here to this church at this time, we're going to have some more program elements after the presentation is over. Last week, we saw that the universe began to exist. We saw that, and we saw that when it came into being, that also all time, matter, and space came into existence at the same time. And we asked the question, well, what's the most likely cause of this? And we concluded that it had to be something that was capable of existing outside of time, space, and matter, and immensely powerful, something that was also personal, able to bring about the cause of the universe. And that, we determined and saw, is God. Now, I know that we gave you a lot of details last week. I want you to get your money's worth in these seminars, okay? So if you missed a few details, don't worry about it. You can always watch the videos again. And I also put a nice summary of our topic on Facebook for those of you who are familiar with the Parkwood Seventh-day Adventist Facebook group. Now, if you have questions about this topic or any topic, again, as I mentioned, please talk to me afterwards, make an appointment to talk with me, or you can text our number, and we're going to put that up here on the screen. The number is 209, get this going here, 209-399-3500. So that's a number you can send any questions that are relevant to these presentations, and we'll do our best to get you a good answer. But as I promised last week, today's topic is going to be totally different. Last week we looked out at the universe. Today we're looking in at our hearts. When you think about it, our lives and our experience on planet Earth is filled with moral language, moral experiences, and moral actions and feelings. I mean, think about it. You watch the news and you realize that there's some greedy CEO that is making away with millions or billions of dollars from his company, and you say to yourself, that's not right. That's not fair, because we recognize that greed is wrong. Or when you find out that somebody's been cheating, we get upset because we value things like honesty. Or if you're in line and somebody cuts in line, you say, hey, that's not fair. We kind of appeal to this sense of justice that we all kind of have in our heart. And what's interesting about it is when somebody gets caught doing something bad, they don't tend to say, well, I reject your standard of morality as an illusion. They don't say that. They say, well, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you there. Or, well, I'm in a big hurry. They try to make excuses instead of arguing that there really is no standard of right and wrong. At times, if you're like me, you feel bad for things that you did that you knew weren't right. Or we feel bad for good things that we didn't do that we knew we probably should have done. And then other times we feel really good because we knew we did the right thing. You helped a person in need, and you feel good about yourself because you knew it was what you were supposed to do. Or when you turn on the news at night and you see that there's a child molester doing horrible things, we get enraged in our hearts because we know that that is morally evil. It's not even a question in our mind whether it's wrong. Or why is it at the end of a movie we cheer when the good guy or the good gal wins in the end? Or we get upset in a film when evil seems to triumph? What explains these moral phenomena? Or when we read in the newspaper about corrupt politicians? And they're everywhere, aren't they? When we read about these men and women, it makes our blood boil because we expect them to do the right thing and not be corrupt and be good people. Or we applaud the actions of heroes, people who sacrifice themselves for those in need. Or the person who returns a lost wallet with the cash still in it, we say, thank you so much, you did the right thing. In our lives, we are living with a moral framework. It's just something we don't even question. But it leads us to a very important question. Why? Why is it that we all seem to have this sense that there is something that's right, there are things that are right, and there are things that are wrong? Why do we have these feelings and thoughts and attitudes? Today we're asking the question, what's the best foundation for objective moral values and duties? But I first want to take a moment to define what I mean when I say this. To say that something is objective, it's to say that it's true whether or not other people recognize it to be the case. Like, I might think that broccoli is one of the best vegetables ever, but that's not necessarily true of your opinion, right? That's just my subjective opinion. However, it is objectively true, it's true universally, that broccoli has a lot of good nutrients in it. And it would probably be good for us to eat more of it, whether you believe it or not. When we apply the concept of objectivity to morality, we could say things like, the Holocaust was objectively wrong, even though the Nazis who did it thought it was right. And the Holocaust would still have been wrong even if the Nazis won World War II and brainwashed everybody into thinking it was right or killed the people who opposed them. We can say it is objectively wrong. Whether or not people agree with it, it just simply was wrong. So when we think about objective values and duties, we're talking about things that are right or wrong, good or bad, good or evil, regardless of whether people recognize it to be that way. Moral values deal with the quality of something, whether something is morally good or morally bad. And moral duties, well, those are the things that we feel obligated to do or not do. And we tend to use words like right or wrong when we're describing them. So today, the big question is, what is the foundation of objective moral values and duties? Where does it get its origin? And at risk of oversimplifying the topic, I'm just going to say that there are two basic ways we could look at it. We could say that God is the source of objective moral values and duties. We call this theism. Christians are theists, Muslims are theists, Jews are theists, etc. And so the other option is we could look at naturalism or atheism. Atheist is simply one who's not a theist. So really, it's either God or naturalism. Now, naturalism is just basically the belief that the universe and life and everything in it all came about by natural means. There was no intervention by God. God's not necessary for life in this way of looking at the world. On this view, the physical world is just all that exists. There's really no cosmic meaning or purpose or anything like that. Life is just an improbable accident. And if naturalism or atheism is true, it's really hard to see how objective moral duties and values could exist. It's hard to see. I mean, you could imagine and understand how there could be subjective morality, all the different cultures having their things that they think are right and wrong. Like maybe you've been to another culture and there are certain gestures like having your feet extended towards people that you're told, oh, please don't do that in this culture, that's very offensive. We view that as a subjective value, but it's not something that we view as objectively right or wrong across the board. If atheism is true, it's hard to see how there could be universal principles of morality. On the other hand, if God exists, it's very easy to understand and formulate a system of beliefs, whereas God is the foundation of morality. St. Anselm, a number of centuries ago, he reasoned that God was the greatest conceivable being, the greatest being that you could possibly imagine, and that's God. And he said it would logically be then that morality would find its origin in God, in this greatest being that we could possibly imagine. This greatest possible being, he would logically be loving and just and generous and faithful and kind, because those are the kinds of things that the greatest possible being would have. The greatest possible being would necessarily be good because it's better to be good than to be morally imperfect. Now, before I go on, I just want to be very clear about something. In my argument today, I'm not saying that you can't be a good person if you don't believe in God. Let's be very clear of that. I know so many people who are wonderful people who don't believe in God. We could point to scores of them, people who are doing great good in our world who have no belief in God. And those of us who are Christians, we could learn something, we could learn a lot of things from our atheist and agnostic friends, can't we? But what I'm suggesting today is this. It seems if there was no God, if there is no God, it's impossible for there to be things that are truly, objectively right and wrong in our world. Now, if God does exist, it shouldn't surprise us that He has allowed us to learn about right and wrong, good and bad, through a whole host of different means in our world. But we're not concerned with how someone learns about morality today. We're asking the question, what's the best explanation for its grounding, for its existence in our world? So having said all that, let's start by talking about moral values, objective moral values. What's a moral value? Well, an obvious example of a moral value that we could talk about would be the value that we all seem to have for human life, human dignity. We believe that humans, in fact, in our past history as Americans, we believe these truths to be self-evident, right? The inalienable rights that we all have as human beings. But I want to be honest this morning and say, as I see it, if atheism is true, it's hard to see why we should think that humans have this intrinsic moral value. Because according to naturalism, this idea that there is no God, everything has come about naturally, humans are just accidents on this little speck of dust somewhere in the universe that by itself eventually is going to run out of heat and energy and all die. It's hard to see where the foundation for morality would be. Now, Richard Dawkins is a man who has said many bold things and had many big critiques against those who believe in God. But I want to point to his admission based upon his own worldview. We'll take a look at it here on the screen. He says this, on his worldview, atheism, there is at bottom no design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but pointless indifference. We are machines for propagating DNA, and it's every living object's sole reason for being. And I have to admit, as much as I disagree with his belief system, I agree with his assessment of his worldview. If we are all just accidental products of chance in the universe, it's hard to see how he'd be wrong. Why should we think that humans have intrinsic moral value? Dr. William Lane Craig, who we talked about a little bit last week, he shared a similar assessment. We'll take a look at this here. He says, on the naturalistic worldview, moral values are just byproducts of socio-biological evolution. Just as a troop of baboons exhibit cooperative behavior and even altruistic self-sacrificial behavior because evolution has determined it to be advantageous in the struggle for survival, so their primate cousins, Homo sapiens, exhibit similar behaviors for the same reason. In other words, if we're all just accidental creatures, it's hard to see how moral values and the value of humanity could be anything more than just an evolutionary mechanism which has helped us to survive. Notice the atheist philosopher Michael Ruse. He shares a similar assessment. He says this, the position of the modern atheist or evolutionist is that humans have an awareness of morality because such an awareness is of biological worth. Morality is a biological adaptation no less than our hands and feet and teeth. Ethics is what? Illusory. He says, I appreciate the fact that when somebody says, love thy neighbor as thyself, they think they are referring above and beyond themselves. Nevertheless, such reference is truly without foundation. Morality is just an aid to survival and reproduction, and any deeper meaning is illusory. So here we see some powerful thinkers within atheism admitting, on our worldview, there is no deeper meaning or ethics or morality. It's all an illusion. So when we feel a need to help somebody, to do something good, it's simply this built-in desire for the survival of our species which is prompting us to do that good thing on that worldview. It's not because there's an actual right or wrong thing to do. And this has been referred to as herd morality. Now, it's interesting, Charles Darwin himself recognized the implications of his worldview. Notice what he said here. He said, if men were reared under the precisely the same conditions as hive bees, if we all were raised like bees, there can be hardly a doubt that our unmarried females would, like the worker bees, think it a sacred duty to kill their brothers, and mothers would strive to kill their fertile daughters, and no one would think of interfering. Darwin himself recognized that with his naturalistic worldview, this type of possibility exists. So why should one think that if atheism and naturalism is true, that humans have any special moral value when we might have had a very different value? So we can see some very powerful implications of this worldview. So the question we have to ask ourselves is this. What is the best explanation for these natural moral impulses that we feel? We believe that humans have basic human rights and that all people are legitimate bearers of those basic rights. I mean, we believe things that, like, women have the right not to be raped. Would you agree? Children have a right not to be burned alive for the entertainment of the rich. But where do these rights come from? Do we really believe? Are we really willing to say that these rights are merely illusions? Now, let's be clear once again. I'm not saying that people who are saying these things and admitting these things practice these things, right? That's not at all what I'm saying. There are so many wonderful atheists and agnostics and people of all stripes. And I'm not even saying that people who disbelieve in God would necessarily accept these admissions by some of the great thinkers within atheism. It's interesting, many folks who adopt these positions seem to live as though they believe something different, even though intellectually this is where their worldview leads them. There are so many different variations of belief, and so don't misunderstand me as trying to say, well, if you don't believe in God, this is what you believe. If you just look at all the diversity within Christians, and you'll understand there is so much diversity among those who do not believe in God. But we're really just trying to follow these two basic lines of thought. If God exists, is it possible for objective moral values and duties to exist? If naturalism and atheism is true, is it possible for there to be true grounding of moral values and duties in our world? Now, one type of positive approach that comes from those who are atheists, it comes through what we call humanism. Humanism is a way of thinking and living which gives the utmost importance to human matters. Humanists stress the potential value and the goodness of human beings, and they strive to live ethical lives and seek the greater good. And religious beliefs aside, I think Christians and humanists can unite on some of these good causes and work and strive for good causes in our world. But I think the problem for humanist philosophers, humanist thinkers, is to try to reconcile two very different ways of living in the world, to try to harmonize these two beliefs. Take, for example, Michael Ruse. We discussed him already. He was saying morality is an illusion. While he has said this, he has also said things like this. The man who thinks it is morally acceptable to rape little children is just as mistaken as the man who says 2 + 2 = 5. In other words, he's saying abusing children is morally bad. It's not morally good. It's not acceptable, which I would agree with as a theist. But he's already stated that morality true morality is an illusion. This seems a lot like trying to have your cake and eat it too. So those who accept naturalism need to come to terms with the logical consequences of their belief. William Lane Craig suggests that atheist philosophers who are humanists don't seem to have fairly faced squarely the consequences of their naturalism. And he gives the example of the humanist philosopher Paul Kurtz, who insisted that human flourishing is the be-all and the end-all of human life, while at the same time, he, like Richard Dawkins, affirmed that Darwin's discoveries show that humans don't have any special significance overall. We're just like any other evolved animal on the planet. And if this is true, it makes you wonder, well, how then could human flourishing be the highest possible good? The reality is, any belief that you hold has some sort of explanatory stopping point. There's just a point at which, when you're trying to explain and answer questions, you just have to say, well, that's just simply how it is. If you've ever had kids or been around kids that are asking questions, you probably know what this feels like. Well, why is it like this? But why? And eventually, you just have to say, well, honey, that's just how things are. And so, no matter what worldview you take, there comes a point where you just have to say, this is my explanatory stopping point. This is just how things are. So, for atheist humanists like Walter Sinnott Armstrong, when it comes to their system of morality, they just have to simply say that whatever contributes to human flourishing is morally good, and whatever takes away from human flourishing is morally bad, and just take that as their explanatory stopping point. But the problem with this explanatory stopping point is that it seems to stop too soon. It seems arbitrary, and it seems premature as an explanation, because if atheism is really true, it's hard to see how inflicting harm on other people would really have any moral dimension at all. As a theist, I believe it's wrong to hurt others, but I don't see what justification a non-theist could have. This is because the equivalent of rape and murder and theft and infanticide goes on in the animal kingdom all the time, but we never attach any moral significance to it. And if human beings are just another evolved species on planet Earth, then why are we different? Why would our behavior have moral significance, but not the other animals? Now, it could be argued that the reason that humanity has moral value and objective morality is because we have the power to reason and think things through and reflect on our behaviors, while other creatures may not have that. And while it's certainly true we are blessed with higher reasoning capacity, we've already seen that people like Darwin himself have said, well, you know, if we'd been raised differently, we wouldn't think the way that we do. And that seems to undermine this idea or this approach. Or we could take it a step further. Michael Ruse has argued that we could easily imagine intelligent life from another planet, where in their development, they have come to believe that rape is morally permissible and a good thing. And so he says, if we imagine them coming to our world, he says, why should we feel like they should abide by our morals when they have their own set of morals as rational beings? All this, again, just points to the arbitrariness to say that human flourishing is the grounds and the foundation of objective morality. So in regards to naturalism's foundation for moral value, I find it quite lacking. But on the other hand, if theism is true, I find that it's a very plausible explanation for why moral facts exist in our world. Now, what about moral duties? We were talking about human value as an objective moral value. What about the things that we feel obligated to do or not do? If God does not exist, is there a foundation for that without God? With belief in God, moral duty has typically been thought of to originate in God's commands. And Christians will think about things like the Ten Commandments as foundational, or Jesus' command to love your neighbor as yourself, and so forth. But how does it work if there's no God? If atheism is true and we're all just animals, then what duty would we have towards one another? Because we've already said that animals hurt each other all the time, but we don't feel like they're doing anything morally wrong. My wife and I like to watch nature videos sometimes. Any of you like to watch a good nature film? We were watching one just last weekend, and it was one specializing on hares and rabbits. And it was really interesting to watch the desert hare. But there was kind of a sad scene because there were three eagles that were working together to chase the desert hare that has those long ears. And eventually, the hare was caught and the hare was killed. And we didn't like that part, and thankfully the camera views kind of blocked the gross part from our view. But as we were watching it, we didn't feel as though we were watching a murder. We just knew that these animals were doing what the animals do, and we saw that a hare had been killed. And this is true even when species kill one another, animals from the same species. For example, in Africa, sometimes the older, aggressive male black rhinos will gore and kill young offspring and other more fertile males and so forth. But when that happens, we don't say that that rhino is a murderer. We just say it's killing other animals. When a rooster forcibly copulates with a hen, we don't call the rooster a rapist. We just describe the behavior for what it's doing. But if naturalism is true, then why should we feel that it's wrong for humans to engage in these behaviors when other animals do it to other animals all the time? And on what basis could we condemn things like war and oppression and crime as wrong? Or on what basis could we praise things like in a meaningful way, brotherhood or equality or love? How could we say that those things are morally right? Dima Zivov argues basically the following. He says, in the absence of God, such actions as rape and murder may be socially disadvantageous for the flourishing of the species, and in the course of evolution has become taboo, but nothing in this suggests that there's anything that therefore such actions are objectively wrong. We could imagine, for instance, that if evolution were rerun, different kinds of rules and taboos might have emerged. Were it more advantageous for the flourishing of our species that males would forcibly lie with females, then we would have been biologically and socially conditioned to treat such actions with favor and not with the kind of moral revulsion with which we currently treat them. Powerful thoughts to think about. Some powerful implications for this worldview. Now, Paul Kurtz, that we mentioned earlier, he's been called the father of secular humanism. So this is a pretty authoritative voice on this topic, and he himself has said this: the moral principles that govern our behavior are rooted in habit and custom, feeling and fashion. So if that's true, it would seem like to follow this, the rapist who ignores societal norms does nothing more than just act unfashionably. Kind of the sort of moral equivalent of wearing socks and sandals together. Someone got that. Some people are starting to do that more. It can kind of look okay, but usually not so good. But if theism is false, it's hard to understand if morality is just habit and custom, feeling and fashion. It's hard to understand what foundation at all remains for moral duties or moral values. And there's another aspect of this conversation that we need to address, which is on atheism, on naturalism, acts of self-sacrifice, giving up your life for someone else, are very hard to explain. It's very hard to justify. I mean, why should you sacrifice your self-interest for your, giving up your life for someone else? Naturalistic explanations would just tell us that this selfless behavior is the result of evolutionary conditioning, which helps to preserve our species. And so the firefighters who went into the Twin Towers on September 11, or the soldier who falls on the grenade to save his platoon, does nothing more significant or morally praiseworthy than the fighter ant that dies while trying to protect the anthill. If there's no God, then the people that we honor as heroes really don't deserve praise for doing something morally good. In fact, on a naturalistic worldview, a strong case could be made that we should resist any of these socio-biological pressures to engage in sacrificial activity, and instead we should just choose to act in pure self-interest, because life is just too short to jeopardize our own self. It should be noted, though, only if God is real are the self-sacrificial acts, the people who give up their life for others, only if God is real are those acts able to be someday rewarded in the future. And again, I'd like to make clear, I'm not suggesting that someone needs to believe in God in order to live a moral life. I'm not suggesting you have to believe that God is real to develop an ethical system. The question that we've been addressing this morning is simply, what's the best explanation for the moral values and duties that we find in our world, these objective principles? And so many people, like myself, have come to conclude that naturalism does not provide a sound foundation for objective moral duties. And perhaps this is why many atheists have just come to the conclusion that objective moral values and duties don't exist. They just say, well, there's really nothing that's truly right or wrong. There may be things that are less desirable or maybe things that are more helpful for our society, but on this worldview, you can't really claim anything is right or wrong, truly. But can we honestly do that? I mean, can you look at your Jewish friends in the eyes and tell them the Holocaust was not morally an abomination? The extermination of 6 million people, while it wasn't advantageous for the Jewish society, it was not a moral issue at all. Can we honestly say that? Can we look into our heart and can we think about child abuse and just say, well, it's just merely unfashionable behavior. It's outside of societal norms what that guy did, what that lady did. I mean, it's easy to deny moral realities when it's kind of a distant concept, but when you try to really bring it down close to home and you think about people who've been wronged in your life, can we honestly say that these perceived wrongs are just illusions? I believe that our moral intuition informs us that there is objective morality. I believe that, like our senses tell us about the world that we live in and negotiate through every day, our moral senses, our moral intuitions tell us that morality is real. There is objectively right and wrong things. Even Louise Anthony, who herself is not a believer in God, she recognized that an argument which tries to deny objective moral values will inevitably be based upon a premise or an idea which is less obvious than the existence of moral values and duties in our world. Now, as we prepare to wrap it up here soon, there's a common objection that comes to basing morality upon God, having him as the standard and the ground of objective morality, and it's called the Euthyphro dilemma. The question comes from the writings of Plato, who had a character in his writing named Euthyphro, who asked, basically, are things good because God wills them, or does God will something because it's good? And if you say that something is good because God wills it, then it seems to make goodness arbitrary. And if you say that God wills something because it is good, then you eliminate the need for God to be the grounding of morality. And so for some, this has been a real dilemma, but it's actually what we call a false dilemma. You've experienced false dilemmas before. A politician might say something like, donate to my campaign if you care about the future. And it makes it sound as though there are only two options, and that you can't care about the future if you donate somewhere else or don't donate at all. And so with the Euthyphro dilemma, there's actually a third option, and the option is this, that God wills something because he himself is good. In other words, as we've said already, his character is the standard, the paradigm of goodness, and his commandments to us are reflections of his just and his loving character. So today, having reflected for a while on moral values, objective morality, objective duties, I think we can see that naturalism fails to provide an adequate explanation and foundation for objective morality. God, on the other hand, provides a very sound foundation, I believe, and also an explanatory stopping point that isn't premature and isn't arbitrary in nature. And so, as you look out at the world, and as you see the moral fabric that we live our lives in, as you observe and listen to the moral intuitions of your own heart, and you see them not as an illusion, but as they truly are, legitimate, objective, moral realities, I think in these things we find powerful evidence that God does indeed exist. So given what we've discussed today, to kind of wrap it all up, I think we could summarize an argument for God's existence based upon morality as follows. One, if God does not exist, objective moral values and duties do not exist. But objective moral values and duties do exist. Therefore, God exists. Well, I hope you've enjoyed our second presentation of four. We have two more over the next couple of weeks. I invite you to invite your friends and keep on studying these things. And also, don't be afraid to ask questions. This is an opportunity to really dig deep. There are a lot of things I wanted to say that I didn't have time to say today. So ask questions, talk to me afterwards, make an appointment, or you can text me at 209-399-3500, and we'll do our best to chat and get to some answers. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.